Hello, I'm Lina Ahmadou. Welcome to Health Chat. On the program today, we will see how women are making an impact in the healthcare landscape. First, we look at medical imaging, which plays a crucial role in tackling diseases. Radiology, ultrasound, and computed tomography, or CT scans, are some of various technologies that medical experts rely on to gain insight into the body to diagnose, monitor, or treat medical conditions. Nuclear medicine is a medical imaging specialty that utilizes small amounts of radioactive substances to diagnose and treat various diseases. Two South African doctors are demonstrating that the sky is the limit for women. Both are nuclear physicians at the Steve Biko Academic Hospital in Pretoria. Tuso Kumalo visited them and filed this report.
It's early morning and Dr. Humuso Mukwala is already working in the day ward in the nuclear medicine section of the Steve Biko Academic Hospital, preparing to examine and treat a non-melanoma skin cancer patient. She is one of only 100 nuclear medicine physicians servicing South Africa's over 60 million population.
Nuclear medicine is an ever-evolving field, so you constantly have to be updating yourself with the latest developments that are happening, so you have to read a lot.
It's a fairly new discipline of study, and she has successfully emerged with a Bachelor of Medicine and Surgery degree, fellowship at the College of Nuclear Physicians, Master of Nuclear Medicine, and a doctorate in nuclear medicine philosophy.
We actually one of the first few centers in the world that was doing actinium 225 prostate cancer therapy, thanks to our mentor and our head of department, Professor Teche.
Dr. Mukwala's daily work involves supervising other physicians who are also making their mark in the nuclear medicine field.
In this room, patients who are referred by various doctors with many conditions are scanned, and the technologists are generally the ones responsible for scanning in this room, and will place the patient on the bed and stand behind that door glass and let the patient lie down and be imaged.
Once the technologists have completed scanning the patients, the pictures are then transmitted to this gamma camera room where Dr. Mukwala and other nuclear medical physicians analyze them. It's crucial for them to look very closely at the images to ensure that all abnormalities are reported.
Right now what we are doing is PET CT, and PET CT is usually requested by doctors of patients who have cancer, and so we report those, and it helps the doctors know whether the patient needs systemic treatment or local treatment.
She is also thrilled to be paving her path in these uncharted waters.
Very proud to be a nuclear medicine physician. I enjoy it. I enjoy what I do.
Dr. Mukwala also enjoys her work.
Even if I try to sit and think what other options could I have taken in terms of career choices, this is always my number one for me.
Dr. Mukwala also has words of encouragement to other women.
It's not impossible. The sky is the limit, and we shouldn't allow the glass ceilings that are placed there for us as females to dictate who we become.
As the current president of the South African Society of Nuclear Medicine, Dr. Mukwala and her team have been invited by the International Scientific and Medical Organization, the Society of Nuclear Medicine and Molecular Imaging, to attend its June meeting in Toronto, Canada, to recognize the great strides they are making in nuclear medicine. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
The World Health Organization says almost two-thirds of the world's population, primarily in low- and middle-income countries, lack access to basic imaging technology, partly due to a shortage of trained personnel. We asked listeners to share their thoughts on the access of medical imaging services in their communities and their safety concerns. Here are some reactions from Nigeria.
For many of us that grow in the trenches, it's actually a bit challenging to access those medical imaging. It takes actually many kilometers to actually be referred to those areas that have access to it. And also looking also around what even medical imaging. So the basic X-ray is a bit accessible, while others, especially people that have cancer, which is prevalent in our areas, and also places that need advanced care, is actually very challenging.
I think it's very, very difficult sometimes, because so many people are scared of going for that. It's lack of orientation about that. It's one of the reasons that makes people scared of going for X-ray.
So the major challenge is finance and then the availability of the equipment. So it's always a drawback for some people when even the doctors recommend you have to go do an X-ray to find out what actually is wrong. They hold back because they can't afford it.
In accessing medical imaging in urban community is more accessible because there are two things one has to look into. There are two challenges. I can see in medical imaging we have what you call accessibility and what you call care of standardization. So, and also there are big differences between, big swing between what is in rural community and also what is an urban community. So in an urban community, it's easy for one to access medical imaging, more of like in rural community.
I'm not saying the medical field, so everybody will always ask because there has been to be an established or pre-existing fear because of lack of knowledge in that area or lack of proper awareness.
For more on the role of medical imaging in healthcare, we spoke with Dr. Stephen Ojwang. He's the CEO of Premier Care Hospital Group in Nairobi, Kenya.
Medical imaging is a medical field where we use quite a range of different modalities to be able to see inside the body for purposes of diagnosis and sometimes for purposes of treatment. And as we use those different modalities of imaging, we are able to use different forms of energies to achieve that using different equipment. Like, for example, when we are using X-rays, we use an X-ray machine which actually produces X-rays, which are highly penetrative rays through the body to achieve the organs or to see the organs internally, internal parts of the body, and then from there we make a diagnosis out of it. So X-rays use radiation called X-rays. CT scans also use X-rays. But when we come to ultrasound, where we use sound at high frequencies, over 20 kilohertz of energies or frequencies of ultrasound, to be able to penetrate that sound through the body and be able to see the organs inside. We also have nuclear medicine, which uses radionuclides, which are highly radioactive elements that once they have been injected into the body, they are able to radiate, and then using a special machine like a gamma camera, able to pick the activities within the body and therefore make the diagnosis. So there are different modalities in which we can achieve medical imaging, each of them depending on which form of energy you are using, and then the techniques being used or employed by radiographers to achieve that. And I think that makes the difference between different modalities that you use in medical imaging.
Nuclear medicine utilizes small amounts of radioactive substances. How safe is this technology? And also, how safe is using radiation in general?
Radiation, any form of radiation is harmful because radiations are capable of causing what we call ionization of cells in the body. And once our cells have been ionized, then they are capable of undergoing what we call mutations, which at long run, they will cause issues such as cancer. So any form of radiation is harmful. But then we have what we called safe doses that we use largely in our healthcare, whereby we use measured doses for purposes of achieving diagnosis. So as we use those forms of radiations, usually as clinicians and us who use them are always guided by a principle called risks versus benefit. So if a patient comes, is very sick, The doctors are anxious to know what is ailing these patients. The patient is at risk of dying of the disease, but now using safe levels of or doses of radiation, although they are not very safe, but if you use that small doses to achieve a bigger picture, which is the diagnosis, and manage to intervene the disease, then that is the calculation usually clinicians make. What are the benefits versus risks of exposure to radiations?
So which one of these technologies is the most accurate? Would you say nuclear medicine, given that it's using something that seems to be even stronger when you talk about radioactive substances?
We cannot say that the particular modalities are more stronger or preferred or better than others, because it depends on what you are looking at. The clinicians, before they send the patients for imaging purposes, they would have understood what cases they are dealing with, which medical cases they are dealing with, and they make a choice or make a decision on which modality that would be fit for that case. So it's not a one-size-fits-all. So most conditions come requiring specific modalities of imaging to achieve that diagnosis. So we cannot say that nuclear medicine is better than CT scan. Neither can we say ultrasound is better than MRI or vice versa. But depending on particular cases, pathologies, or particular diseases, there are instances where ultrasound will be superior to MRI when you're looking at particular diagnosis you want to achieve, or vice versa. So usually the clinicians, together with the radiology team, have an opportunity to decide which modality is premier for what they are looking at. Sometimes they complement each other, most often.
You talked about safety, and that's something that the average person is concerned with. Do you come across people that are hesitant about the use of medical imaging, or even some kind of myths and misconceptions?
We have actually a lot of those hesitations from our patients. Most of them are driven by cultural beliefs. Others are misconceptions. And of course, others are ignorance, especially some people who may not have had a lot of information about the role of medical imaging or radiography in diagnosis. So we have a lot of patients, once they have been referred for such a medical imaging procedures, because of the cultural beliefs, others believe that if you do an X-ray or you do a CT scan, it's going to cut short the number of years you are supposed to live in this app. Others is misconceptions that if you do an X-ray, you are not going to be able to give back, or you are going to give back to abnormal children or such. And as much as that might be true, usually is underneath is a lot of misunderstandings and misconceptions and cultural beliefs. So once we have that, the clinicians who are referring patients for these modalities have a duty to be able to explain and demystify these myths and misconceptions and cultural beliefs, such that patients understand that the procedures that they have been sent to do have more benefits than risks that they might be holding in their selves. But part of what we are supposed to do is to engage the patients, and it's their right to be explained the procedure, the benefits, and of course the risks. It's usually patients' rights to know those information. So we endeavor to explain to them that the procedures that they have been sent to do have got the following benefits against the following risks. And of course, we try to convince them to undertake these procedures. But we have had a lot of cases where patients come, they are sent for these procedures, and they literally refuse. And when you listen why this is for refusal, you realize that most of them are pegged on misunderstanding, misconceptions, and cultural beliefs. So it's true, we have a lot of them, but again, it's our duty as medical healthcare workers to explain to them and convince them, what we call consent, seek consent from them, which is actually informed.
And before we wrap, Dr. Jeevas, how does the availability or lack thereof of medical imaging services impact healthcare outcomes?
As who are in the medical imaging world, we believe we are the eyes of medicine. The radiography and the medical imaging is the eye of medicine. So in as much as doctors are trained to and have knowledge to make clinical diagnosis, and have through the training have got discernment of the disease processes in the patients, we are in an era where we do evidence-based. We want to confirm that indeed this is the problem aiding our patients. We want to check whether the treatment or interventions that have been made are improving. So in order, you have to do an X-ray or an imaging procedure. Lack of this for sure can impact on the overall outcomes of patient care and management. And because then there will be no, there will be a missing link in that chain in healthcare, where you have an opportunity to do evidence-based diagnosis and evidence-based treatment follow-up.
That was Dr. Stephen Ojuang, CEO of Premier Care Hospital Group, speaking to us from Nairobi, Kenya. You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It's time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Health Chat. The World Health Organization says women account for 67% of the global health and social workforce. They are making a significant impact in boosting medical research, shaping healthcare legislation, and transforming patient care. Let's go to Nigeria, where one woman is making a difference among the people of Gadani Jatal community in the northwestern Kaduna state.
It's a Wednesday afternoon, and as usual, Hafsat Muhammad is finishing her daily work, domestic chores, before setting out to the only health center in the community where patients are waiting. Hafsat is not a qualified health worker. However, because of the lack of medical personnel in the area and the challenges people seeking medical attention face, she decided to step in.
I am volunteering services in the clinic. My level of education is not advanced. I stopped when I obtained a certificate. It's like a preliminary education in the area of health.
But Hafsat does not view her educational background as an obstacle to helping the community. For years, members of the community have been traveling long distances to neighboring cities to get medical attention for their sick. And because of poor roads, patients were being transported on motorcycles, causing miscarriages and other complications for some pregnant women.
I have come for the antenatal, and she helps us a lot. If a sick person is brought to the hospital, they will go and call her at home, and she comes out to have the person.
Hafsat receives calls at any time of the day whenever there is a patient in the clinic. Despite her voluntary spirit, she faces challenges.
We're suffering from lack of electricity and water in this hospital. When we receive a patient or pregnant woman in labor, we use the light from our cell phones to help them. And when our phone batteries run down, we continue to do it in darkness.
The traditional ruler of the village described Hafsat as a blessing to the community.
The way you see her in the hospital, that is how she is always available, even at midnight. She is always ready to help.
The Gadini Jatal is one of the many areas suffering from the lack of healthcare facilities, but many of them are lucky to have volunteers like Hafsat Muhammad to fill the vacuum. Deirdre Murray McIntosh for Fatima Celine Ladon, who reports from VOA Kaduna.
Nurses are the backbone of health services. They are in every community and often the first healthcare providers patients will see before consulting with a doctor. And in some communities, they are the only medical providers. We asked some nurses to share the challenges and rewards of their profession.
I really enjoyed the job of nursing since I was a little kid. First and foremost, I wanted to know how the human body. The first challenge is that the nurse is doing multiple jobs at the same time, and this depends on what environment she is in. There is an environment where the nurse is used as a sweeper, messenger, collects and transmits patient tests in the laboratory. The second challenge is that there are not enough tools as needed. We have a shortage of labor supplies and a shortage of workers at the same time. This is a major challenge that brings us to conflict with patients, where they feel that the nurse does not care about patient at all. This is due to the shortage of workers.
Women doctors face challenges regarding opportunities to get promoted. We don't have many women in top leadership positions in hospitals. One other issue is that women doctors face challenges in finding resources to pursue training in specialized medical fields. My hope on behalf of women doctors is that we receive support from the government and partners to afford us training in these specialized fields, because that's a serious problem, as I mentioned. I hope that the law would take into consideration the issue of maternity leave to enable a woman's right to her time off as a new mother so she can breastfeed as recommended by experts without losing some of her employment benefits.
Women make up the majority of the workforce in the health sector, yet they face significant roadblocks as they seek leadership roles. Amy Batson is the president of Women Lift Health, an organization that works to improve women's leadership in global health. She discusses what can be done to increase the number of women in leadership positions in the healthcare field.
There's a lot of barriers to women advancing to leadership positions. And some of those barriers are very explicit and some are more sort of implicit. And they vary from country to country. And so you have in some countries, it's just outright harassment. There's sort of a, you know, you don't belong here kind of comment to senior women, or you know, you talk too much, you talk too little, you need to be respectful to your male elders. And we've heard often reports from women leaders of how challenging it can be to suddenly be the manager or supervisor of men, especially men that might be even older than they are, and how these men have difficulty suddenly accepting that this person is making the decisions and is their boss. And when you only have men at the table, you're leaving out 50% of the population. Well, so we work on three key pillars. One is individual leadership development. The other is institutional influence. So, and the third is society, because you can't just invest in the woman. You also have to be influencing where she works and lives. At the institutional level, we're looking at how can we be working with senior leaders to be having the will, having the awareness and the commitment to take action that addresses some of those issues I was talking about, like the double standards that are applied to men and women. And at the societal level, we work with influencers and champions, and about like where we can be bringing a platform for them to be using their very respected and heard voices on issues about, for example, why women's leadership is important for the country. It's been really exciting to see the results of our work. Now, we're still relatively young, we're 4 years, but already what we're seeing is the changes for these women, that they're, you know, both on quantitative, like we do evaluations, as well as qualitatively. We're hearing how these women are now having a higher degree of confidence, of recognition of, oh yeah, I am a leader, even though I've been told all these years, I'm actually like, you know, an important and powerful leader. How they're working in healthcare and they're recognizing challenges that have been there that nobody's been paying attention to. So, you know, for example, we have like each of our women also has a leadership project, right? That's something where it's about impact at the health and gender, intersection of health and gender. And so the ripple effect of what these women are doing in the health sector, taking on some of these challenges in their institutions, in their communities, is really inspiring to see.
That was Amy Batson, president of Women Lift Health. Now, one of the healthcare challenges in Africa is the shortage of training and education for workers. To help, a U.S. charity called Mission to Heal is training healthcare workers who serve patients in remote locations. Juma Majonga reports from Ngurunit village in northern Kenya.
It's a beehive of activity at Ngurunit Health Center in a remote village in the dry Marsabit County in northern Kenya. Residents have gathered here, some traveling tens of kilometers to seek medical services. On this day, the U.S. medical charity Mission to Heal is providing more advanced medical equipment and training local medical workers to use it.
We take the experts that live here and we bring them in there and show them how it is that we can do things and get the principles without the plumbing. Taking care of the people in the context of their culture and their family setting is something that's going to happen here.
Meshek Lekeda is a local nurse at the Ngurunit Health Center.
They've even taught me how to manage some new conditions here and there that I never knew before.
They have the knowledge, but their resources are limited. And so I think that we can help them try to best manage things and come up with diagnoses and come up with the best possible diagnosis and treatment with their limited resources.
Senaheya Kalaili traveled over 30 kilometers to seek treatment.
I came here in a lot of pain, especially my abdomen. The doctors gave me 2 injections and medicine, and now I feel better. The pain has gone down.
Volunteer medical students say they are learning too.
Obviously, the culture is very different and the resources are very different. So there's been a steep learning curve in terms of figuring out what we can do and really what we should do.
The UN Development Programme says some 408 million people in sub-Saharan Africa still don't have healthcare. Mission to Heal says it has trained 3,200 healthcare workers on the continent. Juma Majanga, VOA News, Ngurunit Village, Kenya.
VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
That's all for this edition of Health Chat. Thank you all for joining us, and thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Linoch Mudu in Washington, with producer Mukbil Yabaho. Until next time, take care, stay well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.